Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Not in a creepy way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1985 comedy horror classic, Reanimator.
Yeah, we are.
Directed by Stuart Gordon.
Has he done anything else ever?
Yeah. In fact, he's done a bunch of other H.P. Lovecraft horror movie adaptation kind of things. From Beyond, Dagon. He also directed the movie Stuck, based on the true story where Mina Suavari hits a guy on her way home from her nursing job, and that guy gets stuck in her windshield, and she just pulls it to her garage and pretends it never happened.
Yeah. I think I've seen it.
Yep. He is also the writer of 22 episodes of ER, and he's the creator of the franchises The Dentist, which is a horror, I guess it's just two in a franchise, and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Did he direct that?
No, I think he's the creator of all of the I Shrunk the Whatevers. So,
wow.
Yeah, so he's probably doing okay, although I think he has passed. Now, this is one of those movies that holds some nostalgia for me, and that probably gives it extra
points. This is exactly what I wanted to talk to you about.
Okay, good.
I've never seen this movie before.
You don't think so?
I'm pretty sure I haven't seen it.
Yeah, okay, excellent. So what did you think in your first watch of Herbert West Reanimator, H.P. Lovecraft's Reanimator, which, by the way, is not really a good adaptation of the story, which is not a very good story.
Let me tell you what I thought this movie was.
Okay.
Let me describe this to you. Maybe you can guess what the actual movie I thought this was is called.
Okay.
I always thought Reanimator, because we had a copy of this. In our house, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I never watched it, even when I was in my phase of just like staying up all night and just plowing through our video library. I never watched it because I thought it was a like psychological thriller starring William Hurt and maybe having to do something with a sensory deprivation tank.
Yes. Oh, God. I know I got in trouble for taping over it.
With this movie?
No. With, well, maybe. Yeah, actually, I don't know. I don't know what I taped over it, but it was, damn it. Oh, yes, I know what you're talking about.
Altered States.
It's called Altered States. I failed your test, but yeah.
Yeah.
Which I have never seen.
I had to look it up.
Yeah.
Because I was... This is not that movie.
No, this is probably, well, I don't know. Yeah. So what did you think?
I didn't enjoy this movie.
Okay.
I don't think it's very good. And absence of any nostalgia for it, I can't figure out why anybody would enjoy this movie.
Yeah. In 2021, it doesn't have... Like, it's not a horror comedy of its era, quite like Return of the Living Dead, referenced in the picture you have behind in your Skype screen.
Right.
Which, by the way, that actually predated this movie. In fact, they used the same gurney with a hole in it to film the Dr. Carl Hill headless guy thing scenes.
Even though I did not enjoy this movie, I can imagine like the 10-year-old version of me really digging this movie.
Oh, this was a frequent rent.
The plot is, I mean, if you think about it too hard, it's completely, it's incomprehensible, but it doesn't make any sense. But there's like just enough of a through line that you don't really have to pay attention to. Like it's perfect for like the attention span of a 10-year-old. And there's gore, but it's campy enough not to be threatening. And there's boobs.
Yeah, campy is the right word for it, for sure. And okay, so I kind of feel a little bit sorry for Barbara Crampton. Mostly because her last name is Crampton, but also because I think maybe because of this movie. Well, actually, a lot of the actors from this movie have done mostly horror stuff since. But she became kind of a scream queen, which of course is fine. I mean, she does a great job, and turns out she's a legitimate actor. Like, she takes acting roles very seriously. She just happened to, you know, this was a time and a place, and she doesn't mind if the role calls for it for a certain amount of nudity. But, like, she probably wrote an extensive backstory on this character.
She was the best part of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, she was the only one who had any sort of redeeming qualities.
She was one of the only professional actors in this movie, though. That's the thing. Like, except for like the top couple people, I think this is almost like a student film. Hold on, I'm going to IMDb and I find myself looking up IMDb. That's how my day is going. Started with looking at the calendar, saying, "Oh yeah, Reanimator. I've already done the notes for the movie because I've seen the movie a million times, and I just got to watch it real quick. You know, it's 88 minutes long, perfect. And then for some reason, I could not find it. I don't know if it's the hyphen or what the problem was.
Which is funny because you told me I think last week that it's on Shudder, so we should do it.
Yeah. I know. I tried to find it on Shudder, and for some reason, I couldn't. There's a whole story about trying to get Shudder to play on my TV, and then realizing that once I got it successfully, okay, I guess I'll do this tangent now. So I have Shudder on my iPod, and I just got a new TV that actually is a smart TV, and it has it has some apps in it. It's a Samsung TV. What the apps it doesn't have is the Shudder app. If it was part of AMC, or Shudder, I think, is part of AMC Plus now, so I probably could have bought AMC Plus for a lot more money every month and done it that way. But I went on to Apple TV, the Apple TV app in my TV, and I couldn't stream it that way. But I could use my Apple TV box attached to the same TV to watch it through my Apple TV. Because Apple TV has an app for Shudder. It's dumb.
And I mean, it doesn't matter for this movie, but I'm assuming you don't have a 4K Apple TV box.
I don't know. Maybe I do. But the thing is, this movie should not have been watched in high definition. That's the thing. I only watched like the last half an hour of it. I'm like, oh, the whole thing would have been real bad if I had watched it in high def from the beginning. This actually benefits from a small screen.
Yes, a small screen, grainy image.
Yes, yeah. Because, like, just stuff like makeup. Like, the fact that somebody took the time to go back and get a nice transfer of this movie and make it available streaming is great, except that, you know, much like, I guess, Return of the Living Dead, when you realize that all the Return of the Living Dead, not Return of the Living Dead, sorry, the Dawn of the Dead, the Dawn of the Dead zombies are just wearing, like, blue face paint. Anyway, I was looking for the budget of this movie, and now I see why Jason doesn't just go to IMDb for budgets. Anyway, I don't imagine the budget was very high, and Stuart Gordon, I'm sure, was just trying to make anything, and the producer was just trying to make something that would make money, and horror films make money, so yay.
I think this movie spawned sequels, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's how popular it was? Of course. $900,000 budget.
Okay. And so it probably made a shit ton of money.
$2 million worldwide. Yeah.
It was a decent investment. So yeah, this has such an 80s feel to it. I mean, everything, it's 80s. It's shot in California, very obviously, even if they say they're in Zurich. It's got kind of soap opera level of acting. It's got some great special effects, but, you know, a little goes a long way. Well, I guess great is a strong word. I mean, when you've seen...
That is very charitable.
Yeah, because... Yeah, you're right. Because, you know, if you've seen... who did the special effects? That's the other thing. I should have made note of that, too. Because this is not a Rob Bottin deal, you know? It's probably not a Tom Savini. They probably couldn't afford those guys.
It was definitely not that level of expertise.
Yeah, not at all. But I guess the genesis of this... was that Stuart Gordon and his buddies were talking about how vampire movies had been overdone and nobody made a really good Frankenstein movie. And somebody suggested that he should take a stab at Reanimator. And he had never read the story, so the legend has it, he went to the Chicago Public Library and checked out a book of H.P. Lovecraft stories and read Reanimator. And then probably promptly just jotted down a couple sentences and made this movie. Because the story itself, it's actually, I think it was written as like sort of a serial. And H.P. Lovecraft, that racist guy, that's just an aside. This story isn't even particularly racist, except it has some elements. He wrote it like for pay. I mean, it was 100% for pay. He didn't really like the character. He didn't really like the story. It was just kind of his Frankenstein story. And Herbert West, it's all told in the third person. It's told by his friend who is his, I guess, roommate, Dan Kane. And West he's just talked about in the story. I mean, he's pretty much everything he is here.
A creep?
Yeah. But this, you know, watching it now, like watching it at the time, I was just all in. I'm like, hey, it's a horror movie. It's got boobs. It's got like horrible special horror effects. It's got, you know, it's got some humor in it. Great. Sign me up. But watching it now and realize, like, the score. How did they get away with just ripping off the Psycho score? Because that's all it is. And it's badly ripped off. It's not great. And the opening titles are stolen Hitchcock type titles. It's like Saul Bass's title work, but not. So I think Stuart Gordon was trying to do a thing.
there wasn't very much original in this movie.
No, I do have one note before we sort of dig in, and that's. Is Jeffrey Combs overacting, or is it Combs? Is Jeffrey Combs overacting, or is everyone overacting?
Was that Herbert West?
Yes.
He was kind of on 11 the entire time.
Yeah, and whenever I see him in something, it's just like it makes me cringe. And I think it's because of this performance, but I'm sure because he was in. From Beyond, of course, and Reanimator 2, and but he was also in The Frighteners and The Man with Two Brains.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but, you know, he still does stuff, and I'm sure he still shows up at conventions and things. But, yeah, he's, maybe he's just an over-actor. So, all that said, before we dive into it, I still enjoyed this movie. I know it was sort of low quality or cheaply done, and but you know, except for I don't know, maybe I just like the fact that at least Barbara Crampton took it seriously, and I think the guy who played Carl Hill, David Gale, he was a sleazy guy, but he took it seriously too, so much so that after the screening of the movie, his wife left him. Because of the horrible things he did to Barbara Crampton.
she wasn't down with the headless against her will oral sex.
Yeah, no, literally giving head rape was the way they described it, like as they're shooting it. Yeah. Yeah. Again,
you know, Monkey Shines was bad enough, but at least everybody in that scenario was consenting adults.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh no. this was, yeah, this is, well, okay. So let's dive in. This may not be a super long episode, if not in a creepy way, but yeah, it'll be fun.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Is Dan Cain supposed to be like the hero of this movie? Like the protagonist?
He's in the story. He's the narrator who is not the hero in any way. I don't know. I mean, I know that you've got kind of an, because Herbert West is, like I said, he's not a hero. He's not even an anti-hero. He's sort of one of the villains. And then,
one of,
yeah, well, Dr. Hill is another villain.
He's like the proto villain.
Yeah. No, it's true. Yeah, he's a weirdo. Again, stealing from Hitchcock, he's a weirdo doing a Norman Bates impression.
West is.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah. Dan Cain, like, what is the point of Dan Cain in this movie?
He's
kind of witless. He's along for the ride. But he's the only one that survives, right?
Yeah.
I mean, West survives, I guess, right?
Yeah. Well, we don't know, but yeah, theoretically. We never see West get killed.
Right. Megan dies.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
All the other characters die a couple times, some of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing is that I'm trying to remember at the very end, because maybe not very many of them actually die for, like, on screen for real. Like, Megan dies because we hear it. Dr. Hill is presumably dead, but also Dr. Halsey, does he actually really die? Or could he be floating around still, too? Like, Megan's dead? I don't remember, too, either, and I watched it maybe less than 12 hours ago.
What about the morgue security guard?
No, he ran off. He lives to tell the tale. He nice. Spent most of this movie masturbating to Boudoir magazine.
Yeah, he was so confident in his job security that he was just blatantly reading porno magazines at work.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Different Good job times. To that guy.
Yeah. Different times. I think the best thing about this movie, also what sold it in the video store, was the glow stick fluid that they used for the reanimation reagent.
Was that actually glow stick fluid?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It sure looked like it. And I guess that would have been right around the time that they were becoming popular, right?
Yeah. I don't even know. I mean, I don't know the technical details. I don't know whether they just found out what the formula was for the glow stick fluid, or they literally bought a bunch of glow sticks.
They had to have just bought a bunch of glow sticks.
Yeah. What do you think? Did you know they made this recently? They made this into a musical?
No.
Like an off-Broadway musical?
Good. Well,
yeah.
Good art. For them.
Yeah. Because art. Yeah, I don't know how many of these people were involved in that musical, but somebody made a musical out of Herbert West Reanimator. And I'm sure it was overacted, and it had that luminescent fluid. Anyhow, the movie opens up at a medical school in Zurich, Switzerland, where a dean is called in to investigate a disturbance in one of the labs. When he enters with a policeman and nurse, they find one of the doctor's professors, Hans Gruber.
Yeah, can we talk about Hans Gruber?
Yeah. Who we thought he died 2 years earlier in Nakatomi Plaza.
That was 3 years later, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. 3 years later.
Yeah. a much more dramatic death in, well, I don't know, actually.
That's pretty, it's a much more dramatic life, actually. But
yeah. Yeah. Hans Gruber, that I had high hopes for this movie when it opened with Hans Gruber. I was disappointed.
Well, we'll know the actor who played Hans Gruber, Al Barry. He's from Halloween 3 and The Last Starfighter. He died like 6 minutes after this movie was made. Oh,
the curse of the reanimator.
Yeah, exactly. So they burst in to find Hans Gruber screaming in agony and a med student, Herbert West, Jeffrey Combs, with him. Gruber's skin has turned purple and his eyes bulge until they explode, spewing blood. The stricken man falls dead and the dean asks if West had killed the doctor, to which West replies, "No, I gave him life." Except a lot cheesier than I just did.
Did you say the stricken man falls dead?
Yeah, I did. Okay. This is just from IMDb. This one, I think, that was pretty good.
Didn't we learn from the Billy Zane movie not to read plot synopses from IMDb?
Yeah, probably. But the alternative was to do actual work. So, you know. Maybe post-retirement, the podcast will get deeper.
Dead Calm. That was...
Yes, it was
Dead Calm. I was searching for.
Yeah, that is a creepy plot synopsis. Yeah, murder. Yeah, boat. And then he pulled her skirt up inch by inch. Anyway. Okay, so later, West arrives in Miskatonic University in New England in order to further his studies. He rents a room, and by the way, from the beginning, he is the worst student ever.
West?
Yes.
Or Kane?
No, okay, I mean, is Kane a bad student? Yeah, well, okay, Kane, we are introduced to Dan Kane, Bruce Abbott, when he is trying to resuscitate a patient, and it does not work. This is in an ER setting, and he keeps trying even though the doctor in charge calls it, and then she tells him, hey, you know, you don't know when to give up.
A little on the nose there.
Yeah.
If I could channel our absent brother.
Yes, a little on the nose. I know that the stories or the scripts, the episodes that Stuart Gordon did for ER later, I realized this is that exact same setting that he would have been writing in, but he could have done so much more with it.
Have you watched ER recently? Like, no. Have you rewatched any of the...
Uh-uh. Is it cheesy?
No, it's really good. Really good. Surprisingly good.
It was... I remember at the time it was impressive. And you very quickly got involved in the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It holds up.
It proved that George Clooney with a bad haircut could still be a star.
Goose. It proved that Goose could be a leading man.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder why Eric LaSalle isn't the leading man he should be.
He's so good on that show.
Yeah. Also in Coming to America.
Very good.
I wonder if he's in Coming to America. I haven't seen the new one. I did tell you about watching Coming to America recently, the original one. Only the first maybe half an hour, and it was interminable.
I just recently watched it with my children.
Oh, yeah. What did you think?
It's a weird movie. Eddie Murphy in that movie is the straight man.
Yeah.
When he's like...
He's Eddie Murphy.
When he's Prince Hakim. Like, he only does his wacky stuff when he's in makeup.
If I remember correctly, it was always Arsenio Hall that impressed me. Just because, mm-hmm. You know, I assume Eddie Murphy can do whatever Eddie Murphy wants to do. Because at that time, Eddie Murphy was something of a god.
I think everybody in that movie did a good job.
Yeah. I love the rip-off McDonald's subplot. But
Yeah, McDowell's. It's so funny.
But all of the whole elaborate sets in Wakanda is not necessary.
It's not Wakanda.
Oh, I know.
But unnecessary, but amazing.
Was it, though?
You'll never see something like that again.
I guess. It would
only be green,
you're right.
Green screen now.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Yeah, no, you're right. They elaborate had, like, dance actual, numbers and stuff.
They actually had, like, actual elephants and giraffes just walking by the windows.
Well, there's that. Yeah, okay. All right. All right. I'll give it that. It's on our list to talk about.
I'm ready. We can talk about it now.
Okay. No. I'm not prepared for that yet. And I realize, yes, that you... flash forward. Wes arrives in Miskatonic University in New England in order to further his studies. And that's where we meet Dan Cain, Bruce Abbott, I guess he would be the Luke Skywalker if he had anything to do in this movie. But he doesn't actually have anything to do in this movie. He gets us to Megan. That's all.
Yeah, he makes a series of questionable decisions, and he never really earns the respect of the audience in a way that would ever make you care about him.
True.
Like, the entire time, I was just wondering, like, why is Megan with him? She's the only one that seems to have her shit together.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we learn that the dean likes him. But no, I think the dean tolerates him because at his very first error, the dean he does something that I've actually never heard of before. The dean of the school cancels his student loans. He doesn't cancel a scholarship.
Wait, did he? He didn't even cancel it, right? He just suspended it.
Yes, yeah.
It's yeah. Like, you can't use the money, but we're still going to charge you interest and make you pay it back.
Yeah, it's wild. So that's why the price of education is the way it is today in America. Corrupt all the way through. Never go to Miskatonic. Not if you have to get a loan from Miskatonic Bank.
Is Miskatonic a Lovecraft thing?
Yes.
That's a made-up place, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's like Stephen King's Castle Rock is H.P. Lovecraft's Miskatonic. And Arkham. All of those are H.P. Lovecraft inventions. And the Necronomicon, that kind of stuff. That's the thing. Okay. So, I probably have at least a dozen H.P. Lovecraft books on Audible. And there's not 18 books worth of stories, or 12 books, whatever, of stories, of Lovecraft stories. But they're all repackaged and read by people like Wayne June does a really good voice. The best Lovecraft on Audible right now, and maybe forever, is the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Society reads the entire fiction of H.P. Lovecraft. And it's like a 30-hour book or whatever. But it's nicely, the chapters are labeled, which in Audible is a really appreciated thing. It means I could go and listen to all of the chapters of Herbert West Reanimator easily. Instead of having to go chapter, and listen to the titles. And Andrew Lehman and the rest of those guys at the H.P. Lovecraft Literary Society, they're the ones who did that... like the Call of Cthulhu silent movie, which we haven't talked about yet, but I really want to. It's done in the 20s style, and it's silent movie, and it's really good. It's actually arguably better than this movie. They do a great job, and H.P. Lovecraft's work is so influential. I mean, he created like all the elder gods, and you know, tentacles, literally, through all of this fiction after him. But his stuff, it turns out he's not just racist because he lived in the 1920s and was a white guy in New England. He actually just full up like white supremacist.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's not a good look. So, very influential, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way he'd be able to publish stuff so wildly popular nowadays with those kind of views. Instead, he'd just have to run for president.
Well, he would, in 2021, he would have worn a bow tie early in his career, but now he'd have his night show on Fox News, but he'd use better euphemisms. Anyway, so, blah, blah, blah. Dan, who again is the everyman medical student, and he is dating Megan, who is Dean Halsey's daughter. And by the way, she's, again, I've used Barbara Crampton's name a ton. Because again, Crampton is a very memorable name. But she was in Body Double, Chopping Mall, From Beyond, and she's in many years of Bold and the Beautiful, Young and the Restless, and recently she was in You're Next and The Lords of Salem. The Lords of Salem, I do not recommend.
Noted.
Yeah. I want to like Rob Zombie's movies, and I almost never do. Okay.
Not even Halloween?
No, those are the worst. Those are the worst. I mean, from a filmmaking standpoint, great. He did a great job directing those movies. But the whole fleshing out of that character was unnecessary. The whole thing, I don't know. I didn't like it. I like the movie 31 better than either of Rob Zombie's Halloween movies. And I liked The Devil's Rejects. That was fine. What was the most recent Devil's Rejects movie?
No idea.
I don't remember. But yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
You know a movie we should put on the list?
What's that?
Because I am 100% certain it does not hold up. The People Under the Stairs.
I've watched it relatively recently, and you are correct, sir. It does not hold up.
Nice.
We could talk about it if we picked two other movies that don't hold up. Actually, this could have been one of those movies, probably.
I think you and I were like the only two people in a movie theater, but we did watch that in the theater.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure I liked it at the time. It was plenty entertaining, I guess, for the time. It was just, I mean, I guess all of these movies are kind of playing around the edges of being kind of like kind of a parody on the form. Like they'll do something that's outrageous on purpose or unexpected in the form. I mean, not to the level of, say, Scream or something, but anyway, sorry. Back to this movie here. I know we're avoiding it, but yeah, so
I don't want to talk about what happens to Megan.
Yeah, well, we don't actually have to talk about much about it because okay. So you're right. The plot is pretty short, pretty simple. What we have is Dan Cain, who's a third year medical student at Miskatonic, and he's dating the Dean Halsey's doctor, or sorry, Dean Halsey, Robert Sampson's daughter, Megan, Barbara Crampton, and this new student, Herbert West, is transferring from Europe, and he is a piece of work. He is unlikable, and he claims that the faculty member, Dr. Carl Hill, who is something of a, I guess, superstar faculty member, played by David Gale, is basically plagiarized Hans Gruber's work and goes at Dr. Gale, or Dr. sorry, goes at Dr. Hill hard. Like, when upon meeting him, calls him a plagiarist, and then during a lecture, he breaks pencils on purpose. Like, he takes pencils out, not like he's gripping them so tightly they accidentally break. He's holding them in front of him and breaking them.
It's like, he's being a real drama queen about it.
Yeah, yes, he is, yes. Because Dr. Carl Hill has stated that the brain only lives for 6 to 12 minutes after death. And Herbert West is like, no, it can live longer.
He stands up and screams, poppycock!
Yeah, yeah. In the meantime, turns out Dan Cain, swinging guy, it's funny, at one point he and Megan are are having sex because that's their young people. That's what they do. And they do it under a gigantic Talking Heads poster, which becomes kind of funny later in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Again, mm-hmm. if you're looking for Easter eggs.
Megan could do better.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course Megan could do better. She knows it. Dan certainly knows it. So Dan also apparently rents a house or owns a house or something, or maybe his student loan pays for a house that has an extra room and a basement. So he posts a thing for somebody to rent the room, and Herbert West shows up. Herbert West shows up, insults his girlfriend, and basically demands to rent the room once he finds out that there's a basement. Yeah, Megan doesn't like him. Dan sees cash money and says, hey, why not? For no good reason, because it's not like Herbert West is in any way charming.
No.
And he is dissing your girlfriend, dude, like in her face. And she is looking at you in a very polite way and saying, do not rent to this man, with her eyes. Anyway, because she's acting like with her eyes and stuff like actors do. Yeah. Yeah. Poor Jeffrey Combs has to act with pencils.
He did a great job with those pencils.
Yeah, he did. But actually, it turns out they did some really excellent space work with things like puppets that look like cats. So
he broke those pencils so menacingly that his world renowned professor yelled at him that he can't wait to fail him.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It turns out college professors are vindictive dicks. Of course, West gets his room and, more importantly, the basement where he does his experiments, including, first off the bat, killing Dan's cat. Or maybe Megan's cat that lives at Dan's house. It's hard to tell. Or Dan's cat that Megan loves. Kills him, throws him in the fridge, and it's going to reanimate him. I mean, claims to have found him dead, but no one believes that.
Found dead after getting its head caught in a jar.
Yeah. Well, you know, that it happens. You often find... I
can't tell you how many times we lost a cat that way.
To a jar, yeah. Yeah. That's why, you know, all squeeze tubes. No jars in our house anymore. It's not right.
Nothing deadlier than a jar for a cat.
Okay, exactly. You know, that old wives' tale, or sorry, that old nursery rhyme. Dr. Hill, in the meantime, and it's just the whole subplot with Dr. Hill having an obsession with Megan is so over the top, crazy, creepy.
It's so gross that while I was watching this movie and my mind was wandering, I actually thought, you know what we need on our podcast is a new bit.
You love bits. Oh,
Yeah. I can't get enough of bits. You know me. I love bits.
Yes, and that's your middle name. Yeah, in fact, they call you Drew Yes Anderson.
They sure do.
Yeah.
We should start handing out not in a creepy way awards for like the creepiest person in the movie. We can call them the creepies. Surprisingly, if we were going to hand out a creepy for this movie, you know, against all odds, it would not be for Herbert West.
Oh no.
It would be for Professor Hill.
Yeah. Professor Hill.
He's super creepy from the get. He's creepy about Megan in front of her father, who is his boss.
Yeah, and just being a little creepy, like that's the Stuart Gordon touch, is that he just doesn't give you that I'm creepy in front of your dad, who's my boss. We later find out that he has a file folder full of news clippings about her, a lock of her hair, presumably part of her clothing.
Yeah, file folder. It's a spank bank, right?
Yeah, it gotta be, yeah.
So gross. He is so gross. So Professor Hill, the inaugural winner of the creepy.
Yes, our first creepy. See, we structured our whole show having our first creepy be given to Jeffrey Combs. And then at the last minute, it turned into David Gale. You know, and then it was like, well, David Gale wasn't here for it because he no one in the world expected David Gale to win it. Jeffrey Combs is actually like, you know, looking from heaven, like God is watching the TV waiting for David to get this award.
Yeah. But at least we didn't have Joaquin Phoenix present it.
Yeah, there you go. It's funny. I didn't get to see the end of the Oscars. I got to see the first 3 hours, and then it just stopped recording. And then I missed the whole last part of it, and I was already thrown because they showed, you know, like Best Director early and all this other stuff. I'm like, it's a weird format.
I was I had recorded it on Hulu. They call it DVR. It's not a true DVR. So I was just skipping forward to all of the awards. And then if the speech seemed interesting, I'd watch a little bit of it and then just, I'd skip to the next award. So I wasn't really paying attention to the structure of the show. And, when they announced Best Picture for Nomadland, I thought I had just skipped over the actor awards. And was so uninterested in going back and finding out who won, I just stopped watching.
Yeah, well,
oh, well. There is a structure. It's part of the social contract.
Well, now we just know.
Switch it up.
You know, we're living in a time where a lot of those social norms have been tested. So hopefully maybe next year they'll rein it back in. We'll see. Some things worked. Some things didn't work. You know, turns out maybe you shouldn't get a movie director known for like ensemble casts to produce a TV show. You know. Anyway,
I don't know. You have not watched The Nick, right?
I have not. No, you have suggested it.
The man can make a good TV show.
Oh sure, yeah, yeah. No, I'm sure he can. Although, again, you know, live TV, right? I mean, this proves that they didn't know who was going to win.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Oh, well. I mean, what a swing and a whiff. I mean, just crazy. But, of course, again, it'll never be the worst Oscars. A couple years ago, they gave the Best Picture to the wrong movie, briefly. Okay. Sorry, back to H.P. Lovecraft's Reanimator, a Stuart Gordon joint. So, in the meantime, Professor Hill is super creepy, creeps all over Megan. Megan definitely, I think Megan wears the pants in all the relationships in this thing. In the actual story, Dr. Halsey is something of a hero. It was a weird kind of experience to listen to the story in 2021 eyes or ears, because during the middle of it, like, you first meet Herbert West and he reanimates like animals and stuff. And they go out. It's more of sort of a grave robbing, or the school is actually a little bit appalled about the experiments, but are letting them get away with it for the most part. And then there is like a typhoid pandemic in the town. And so all these, you know, much like what happened with COVID, all these medical students are kind of graduated early so they can go out and help the effort. And Dr. Halsey actually works tirelessly, saves many, many lives, and ends up dying at the end of the plague, basically. Like all of Herbert West's like experiments have to stop, and Dan relays that West is like, you know, it was a shame because we had all these dead bodies, but we didn't have any time to try to reanimate them. Like, before it was hard getting dead bodies, but now there's people are dropping like flies. But no, although in that they also did reanimate Dr. Halsey, and it went poorly. But in a much darker way than actually this movie, surprisingly. So, blah, blah, blah. I don't even remember. Oh, yeah, okay. So, Dan discovers that, West has reanimated the cat Rufus, and West then recruits Dan as his partner to research to defeat Death. And Hill manages to turn Halsey against both West and Dan. And they get barred from the school and student loans rescinded or whatever, canceled, suspended, whatever. And West and Dan sneak into the morgue to test the reagent on a human subject in an attempt to salvage their medical careers. That's not right. That's not why they're doing it. They're just trying to further the science. And Dan is, it's almost like, it's not like he's like a super willing participant necessarily. He just is along for the ride because West just got him like kicked out of school. And presumably he's going to have to go to school somewhere else. And he is then going to lose his girlfriend who promised to marry him after he graduates, which he will not do.
He will not. Yeah. I don't know what Dan Cain is doing,
but, they go and try to reanimate a corpse and, they do so. The corpse immediately attacks them.
Real act of hubris here. They're looking for the freshest corpse who did not die of anything that would like really harm most of the body.
Yeah.
So they pass by a burn victim. They pass by like a gunshot wound victim.
Mm-hmm.
And they think, yeah, all the times that that things have been reanimated before have gone so well that we're going to reanimate this giant bodybuilder dude.
Yes, yes. Which they do. And the giant bodybuilder dude. Turns out if you get reanimated, you come back mad. You know, you wake somebody up, he comes back angry. That's kind of what happens here. And eventually they kill the corpse again by plunging a bone saw through him all the way through.
Through his chest.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is a innovative use because we have only seen it used to cut open a skull so far in this movie.
Yes. Yes. By the way, during this whole thing, Halsey actually stumbles upon the scene and ends up getting killed by the corpse. So then, of course, they, you know, what do? You try to reanimate Halsey. And because he's the freshest dead they've ever had. So got to do it. Dan actually says at every point, this is a bad idea. And West is like, no, it's a great idea. Here's my little micro cassette recorder. Keep narrating. And then he can't do it, which is actually the most realistic thing in this movie.
Yeah, them the whole death of Dean Halsey and his reanimation leads to my favorite part of this entire movie. Which is Megan, like the most she makes the most reasonable, honest statement in the whole movie. Like it was such like a perfect thing to say that it took me out of the movie for a moment. Because she had been told to wait at the nurse's station.
Yes.
But she eventually goes down to find her dad, who's been gone for like, I don't know, 5 minutes?
Yeah, not very long, really.
Yeah, and she goes down and he has been turned into this drooling blood out of his mouth, incoherent zombie that she doesn't have any context for. And her reaction is so perfect. It was like, what the hell happened? It's only been like 5 minutes. What happened to him? What happened to my dad?
Yeah.
I just saw him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, she's got a backstory with this character. Hill then discovers that Wes work and gains guardianship over Halsey. Who he puts into a padded cell adjacent to his office. Again, this is a weird teaching hospital for sure. But also a technical note here, the padded cell set was so flimsy that the actor when Robert Sampson was like trying to actually act and throwing himself against the walls, they would collapse. So he basically had to sort of sit like near the wall with his head on the wall, barely, so as not to jostle the wall. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you describe that room like it's a weird thing. I remember when I was working at the nuclear reactor at my university. Right next to where we would do our experiments in the reactor core. Yeah, we just had a padded room.
Of course.
With a two-way mirror.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Can't tell you how many times that came in handy.
Well, luckily there's a guard at the door. That would just like smoke cigars and read nudie magazines. Anyway, thick magazines too. I mean, they had articles. He was reading articles.
Yeah, reading articles and having to take lots of bathroom breaks.
Of course, yeah. Well, you know, you're not a creep. You're not going to do it in public. Yeah. Take your break. So, okay. So, Hill has gone to confront West in the basement lab and threatens to blackmail him to continue his research so that Hill can take credit for it. And then while Hill is distracted, West hits and then decapitates Hill with the shovel. Which, I like that. I mean, it's super telegraphed, but, you know, it's, I mean, he almost takes a practice swing before he hits Hill in the back of the head, but it's still, it was great. Just like chopping his head off with the, with like a flat shovel is pretty great.
And of course, what does he do? Like, what's his first reaction after beheading somebody?
Oh, he fills him full of reagent to try to reanimate his body and his head separately.
Yeah, separately.
He's never had whole parts before. Okay. And this is where the movie takes a bit of a turn. Okay? Because right but before this point, we've had, you know, a kind of low-budget horror movie with some humorous aspects to it. But now it turns into, like, a full-on farce.
Yeah, I will say, to this point in the movie, the audience is ahead of the characters in the movie the entire time. We know bringing anything back from the dead is not going to turn out well. We just know. It's a thing. It's kind of silly that the characters in the movie don't realize it.
Yeah.
And keep trying. But yeah, it's at least at this point in the movie, the audience is no longer ahead of the characters. Because who could predict what would happen now?
Exactly. Well, and as you're talking about this, it actually occurs to me that, you know, the thing about the Frankenstein story is that if you're, you know, looking at the Frankenstein story pretty much from any angle, but certainly following Dr. Frankenstein, it's all about, you know, the folly of playing God. This movie doesn't address that subject at all. I mean... It's simply a, oh, well, it's science. We can do it. It's no problem. I mean, but there is no one ever suggests that it's wrong morally or that it's, it could be like, you're going to have dire consequences. No. It's a scientific dick swinging contest between West and Hill and everyone else is along for this ride.
Yeah.
Except Hill's using a stolen dick. Okay, it's where my analogy falls down at this point. Like, the metaphor crumbles. But, oh well. Yeah, because now we have Dr. Hill, who is a head and a body. And his head still controls his body. And he sort of slurs his words. At first, you think he's some sort of, like, brains kind of zombie. But no, not quite. He does a lot of like
he's just British.
He's got anyway. So yeah. So now he does Well, he does a curious thing. He goes to the morgue, and he actually has his body put on a lab coat, and he takes this sculpture of a hair. This, I guess, it's a
it's like an anatomical display.
Yes,
right?
It's an yeah, exactly. So, and one half is a face, the other half is like an open skull and the brain and everything, right? So he puts that on the shoulders. Now, it's pointed out in the trivia, and it was actually pointed out at some sort of, I don't know, maybe a Q&A session at some point, that why didn't he just put the head on the shoulders?
His own head, right?
His own head, yeah.
Yeah.
He's carrying the head in a bag, but he puts, yeah, anyway, so. Oh, well.
Yeah, they're just going for full-on camp at this point.
Yes, exactly. Yep. And that's, see, if they would have kept up with the camp, I mean, they did keep up with the camp through the whole thing, except for that rapey bit, which really, actually, it didn't really
fit. Very elaborate rapey bit.
Oh, yeah. It lingered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, yes, see, overcome with curiosity, West reanimates both Hill's head and body. While West is questioning Hill's head and taking notes, Hill's body knocks him unconscious. The body carries the head and steals West's reagent, returning to Hill's office, and then exercising mind control over Halsey. By the way, there is a whole, like, subplot about Dr. Hill working on mind control experiments that didn't make it into this movie. But I guess it would have explained some stuff, but it turns out this is not a movie that needs that, because at some point, at the end of this movie, Dr. Hill was mind controlling all these zombies, reanimated, I guess that's a zombie.
Yeah. He was somehow controlling their minds after using his laser saw,
yes.
Right?
Yes. By the way, I think I confused this a little bit with From Beyond, because I thought they were going to talk about the pineal gland, or pineal gland, which I think is, I think they talk about it From Beyond as that's where the horror lives, or that's where we can see the other worlds. From Beyond is a much better story. From Beyond is a story that tells you, like, yeah, once science figures out how to see everything that's really going on around you, you didn't really want to know. And once you can see it, it can see you. So it drives you crazy. Yeah. Great. It's a great story. There's a really good claymation version of that story.
Nice. Keep telling me about it. I'll be right back.
Okay. Yes, there's so many adaptations of H.P. Lovecraft's work. The From Beyond, I think I'll see if I can find it. I'll put a link to the claymation version of it. Just good. I kind of like Cool Air is also a good H.P. Lovecraft story. Of course, In the Mountains of Madness is a favorite. Okay.
Can't wait to hear about that.
Yeah, well, it wasn't very long here, Ron, so you hear a little bit about it. Okay, so West and Dan track Halsey to the morgue, where they find Hill's body holding his head in a compromising position over a restrained Megan. It's not a compromising position. like Megan is well, I guess she's about to be forcibly compromised for sure. But yeah, it's anyway. So West distracts Hill while Dan frees Megan. Hill reveals that he has reanimated and lobotomized several corpses from the morgue to do his bidding. However, Megan manages to get through to her father.
Several, all of them.
Yes, yes, exactly. Including the lady that Dan was trying to revive in that first scene.
Really adding insult to injury right there.
Except that they referred to her as the dildo lady. She was a dildo enthusiast that would keep hiding dildos among the corpses on the set.
Hiding them where?
Just wherever. They kept cropping up. Anyway, again, I don't know what the further context of it.
Where do they find these people?
That's the thing, is it, like, all the zombies are everybody's cousin. Like, there are no professional actors in the zombie makeup. Although, again, I hope the dildo lady had a much longer career. I bet you she has a lot of stories to tell. So, anyway. Megan manages to get through to her father, sort of overpowering the mind control of Dr. Hill. And then he fights off the other zombies long enough for Dan and Megan to escape. In the ensuing chaos, Halsey is torn to pieces by the corpses after he destroys Hill's head, and West injects Hill's body with what he believes is a lethal overdose of the reagent, which began to destroy Hill's body. But Hill's body mutates horribly and attacks West, who screams out to Dan to save his work as he continues fighting. He's dragged toward the monstrosity by tentacles, and his fate is unrevealed. Dan retrieves the satchel containing West's reagent. As Dan and Megan run from the morgue, one of the reanimated corpses attacks and kills Megan. Dan takes her to the hospital emergency room and tries in vain to revive her. In despair, he injects her with reagent. Just after the scene fades to black, Megan screams, implying that her reanimation has backfired. The end.
I have to take umbrage with that characterization. I don't think it backfired.
Oh, no, it worked, but...
It did exactly what we have observed it to do for the entire movie.
Well, that's the thing. It doesn't have unintended consequences. It seems like these are the intended consequences. Or these, at least, are all the observed consequences.
That's why Dan Cain is such a bozo.
Yes.
Like you said, the entire time, he's like, this is a bad idea, this is a bad idea, this is a bad idea, but he still goes along with it.
Yep, every time. So, when this was originally released on videotape, there were two versions available. There was an unrated theatrical cut and an edited R-rated version. The R-rated version actually runs 93 minutes long, has much of the gore edited out, but replaced by various scenes, which were deleted for pacing purposes, including that whole subplot about hypnotizing several of the characters to make them suggestible to his will. And actually, let's see. But the video store's rental policies, the reason why they made two versions is because there were many video stores that would refuse to rent unrated films, because that would be considered by the MPAA to have the film being rated X. Remember when, like, unrated or director's cut was a special thing? I mean, I guess it sort of is. I think we got burned by the director's cut experience.
Are you talking about Zack Snyder?
No, I'm talking about actually George Lucas.
No.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so this movie actually received good reviews at the time. We're talking about legendary reviewers. Pauline Kael enjoyed the film's indigenous American junkiness. Roger Ebert gave the film 3 out of 4 stars and wrote, "I walked out somewhat surprised and reinvigorated, if not reanimated, by a movie that had the audience emitting taxi whistles and wild goat cries." I don't understand that, but good for him.
Roger. Come on.
New York Times reviewer Jane Maslin wrote, "Reanimator has a fast-paced and a good deal of grisly vitality. It even has a sense of humor, albeit one which would be lost on 99.9% of any ordinary movie-going crowd."
Oh, if you're smart enough, you'll understand and enjoy the movie.
Yes. Well, again, turns out, well, anyway, film critics are sometimes a little self-important. Paul Atanasio, a Washington Post reviewer, praised Jeffrey Combs' performance as, quote, "beady-eyed, his face hard, almost lacquered. Combs makes West into a brittle, slightly fey, psychotic in the Anthony Perkins mold. West is a figure of fun, but Combs doesn't spoof him." In a review for the Los Angeles Times, Kevin Thomas wrote, "The big noise is Combs, a small, compact man of terrific intensity and concentration." David Edelstein, writing for The Village Voice, placed the film in his year-end top 10 movie list. Now, on the other hand, Lovecraft readers did not like the movie. First of all, probably H.P. Lovecraft would not have approved of the gratuitous nudity. Because not only was he like a racist, but he was also something of a prude.
All right.
Yeah,
hitting all the hallmarks of a winning dinner guest.
Well, but the thing is, actually, what's funny is because we have a lot of Lovecraft writing, like letters, because he used to write back and forth to people like Edgar Rice Burroughs and other authors, and he let them use his universe to write stories in. So there's some like Robert E. Howard stories that are in the Cthulhu Mythos universe and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, Lovecraft is like, yeah, this is an exploitation story. I don't like them, but I make money. I think I got like $5 per episode for these stories. So, you know, this is his Flash Gordon kind of money. And he, you know, again, like any good artist, he died relatively poor and unappreciated. Yeah, looking at you, Banksy.
Yeah.
So, I apologize for the unpleasantness of this movie experience for you.
No, I'm glad I watched it. This was one of those movies that I always felt like I should go back and see. So I was excited when you recommended it, but I think it just passed me by. I think I needed to watch it in the mid 80s.
Yeah, I could see that
for it to really hit.
Yeah, it's again, it's sort of hard to defend in modern times, and yet like I said, I still had fun watching it. It was fine.
I had fun hearing you say the phrase, and then the stricken man expired.
Well, see, so we all got something out of this experience. So I'm going to give this movie like a C+, a B- for nostalgia. And I'm going to throw it over to you with the trademark bit. Was it worth it? It's not really a bit, more of a segment, more of a...
Keep going.
No, I have nothing, man. I'm tired. It's been a long week.
No. Okay. You can skip this movie.
It's perfect.
If you don't already have nostalgia for it, that's, I can't find any reason to recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch Return of the Living Dead. You'll have a better time.
Much.
Yeah.
Much better.
But still, again, so housekeeping. Yeah. So your housekeeping.
Not much going on. I rewatched Supersonic.
Oh yeah.
That's still an amazing movie, an amazing band, just amazing interviews with the Gallagher brothers.
Yeah.
It is crazy. Like the whole situation is crazy because they are so complimentary of each other. But in such damning ways.
Oh, yeah. Like,
they still can't stand each other. But, yeah, that is such a wild movie. And the music holds up. The movie holds up. It's great. One of my favorite documentaries ever.
Excellent.
I've been listening to some Oasis lately. So yeah. It was on my mind.
By the way, Sound of Metal got some Academy Awards. Pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
Well deserved. Allows me to tell everybody I know, watch Sound of Metal, change your life.
Yeah, I was really hoping for Paul Racy to get the Oscar. I know he didn't really have a chance, but
yeah.
That would have been pretty amazing.
It would have been. I almost feel bad for Anthony Hopkins, because I know he did a good job in that movie. I've heard he did a good job in that movie, but still,
I'll never know because I won't watch it.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Although, to be honest, don't necessarily think I'm going to watch Ma Rainey's Black Bottom either.
I might. Turns out Chadwick Boseman is really good. Have you seen 21 Bridges?
No.
I got done watching that movie and I was like, man, that was not a good movie. Fucking loved it. he is so charismatic. He's so good in that movie. It's an insane movie. But yeah, it was great. I think I gave it like 2 stars on Letterboxd, but the more I think about it, it was really like a 4-star experience.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, excellent. I will watch 21 Bridges. I think you had told me about it. So I'll have to add it to my list.
I, I probably was not very complimentary of it, but the more I think about it, the more I'm like, man, I really enjoyed that movie.
I know, if I remember correctly, though, I mean, you, the way you described it, if I remember, if I can sum up what I remember about what you're saying, it was like, it shouldn't work, it shouldn't work, it shouldn't work, but it worked.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
That's right. I watched, a movie just showed up on Amazon, I think last night, that I watched because I couldn't sleep. Michael B. Jordan movie, kind of set in the Tom Clancy universe. Again, not great.
What's the name of the movie?
Not good. Without Remorse.
Oh, okay.
Without Remorse. It was fine, but it should have been better. It's kind of like the Jack Ryan TV show. Like it's a watered down version of something that could be really fantastic, but it makes it like very, very digestible, but also pretty forgettable. So in the moment, I liked it, but like I don't think I could describe you the plot of it.
Well, you know, sometimes, especially if you can't sleep, sometimes just that's just what you want. It's got to get from A to B. That's all you need.
The night before, I couldn't sleep, so I watched the documentary Speed Cubers.
About Rubik's Cube enthusiasts?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the draw.
Oh, okay.
It's more about like these two particular cubers.
Oh, excellent. Is it good?
It's really good.
Oh, excellent.
It's really good. I may or may not have shed a tear at the end.
That's what documentaries are all about.
Also, it's only 40 minutes.
Yay! Hey, let me tell you something great about Reanimator. 87 minutes.
Yes, that is very great.
Yeah.
By the way, now that I can make sure that this won't actually appear in the podcast, I probably blacked out for like a good 2 minutes while you were talking about the movie, because I was trying so hard. I was restraining myself so hard when you were talking about the head between her legs and about how it lingered. And I was like, in my head, this is what wanted to come out, but I restrained myself. I think you meant he kind of lingered.
Oh, that's beautiful. You can't keep, yeah, you can't no, hide your no, light under a bushel. No. Okay.
No. Yeah. No. I didn't hear what you said for like 2 minutes.
Oh, Connie lingered is the funniest thing I have heard all year.
I know you would like it. No one else would. I hate myself for even thinking it.
Oh, no. See, I'm telling you, your brilliance just has no, yeah, there's no end to the depth. It just goes on forever. Connie Lingard is really, really, really funny. But I think one of the funniest things that happened recently was when you sent a text and Jason thought the text actually was from me.
Oh, yeah. So I don't even know why. Yeah. I was having a dark moment.
It's funny, though. It's funny stuff.
Yeah, sometimes I just have to give my brothers a glimpse into my soul.
It's awesome. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. You guys all impress me. All. You both impress me. It's very, very funny. Okay, and on that note, I got to leave you. Because I got to hit a bathroom. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you two, not in a creepy way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way. Okay.